my lecture about Revelation.
I just wanted your basic opinion about Revelation.
My basic opinion about Revelation. I'll just kind of repeat what I said a few minutes ago. Two thousand years ago, for several centuries, apocalypses were a popular form of reading. Not reading entertainment, listening entertainment. You know, because back then, people didn't sit around and read stuff. Because most people couldn't. What you had was somebody who could read out loud to the audience. And it often happened that you'd hire a slave to do that. It often happened the slaves were better educated than their masters.
Interesting.
Because you could hire somebody to read and write. So you can just pay somebody else to do that for you. Apocalypses were a popular form of literary entertainment. Back then, there was no such thing as science fiction, but they had religious fiction that kind of worked the same way as modern, as some leading edge, far out science fiction does nowadays. People want stories that are really weird and far out, and pretending to predict the future.
Mm-hmm.
And to reveal secrets. In fact, that's the basic meaning of the word apocalypse, is revealing something that was hidden. We have this apocalypse that in the Protestant tradition is called Revelation. It was written by John of Patmos. So who was John of Patmos? In Ephesus, the church of Ephesus was originally founded by St. Paul. But then some Nazareans showed up who were from the Alexandrian school. And as odd as it may seem, in early Christianity, before it really was Christianity, there was different religious schools that had something in common and occasionally tried to join up any port in the storm. So in Ephesus, you had these the Alexandrian school Nazareans trying to worship under the same roof as the Pauline Christians. They tried. Got to give them credit for that. They may have been kind of inspired by what was going on in Antioch. which was the actual birthplace of the religion we call Christianity. In Antioch, you had Bishop Ignatius managing to keep Nazarenes and Pauline Christians under one roof, and his secret, his formula was to come up with a new universalized religion that meshed the both of them into a single religion. So that's why you refer to this as Catholic. And of course, all forms of Christianity nowadays that are recognizable as being Christian are the Catholic kind, which is the weaving together of St. Paul's religion with the Nazarene tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The things I'm telling you, that nearly all of it is right there in the Bible. The Bible doesn't mention Bishop Ignatius, okay, but the Book of Acts is the fictitious, somewhat fictitious history of the origins of Christianity, which isn't referred to as Catholic in the Book of Acts, but it's referred to as Catholic by Bishop Ignatius himself, whose letters we have.
Okay.
Protestants get pissed off when I tell them they're Catholics. because of course, Protestants don't want you to know anything about church history.
Yeah.
Because for the first 1400 years of Christianity was Catholic. There was no such thing as Protestants. And there was no such thing as Bible-based Christianity because the people in the pews, they couldn't have a Bible. Bibles are too expensive. It was only the invention of the printing press that made it possible for somebody in the pews to go on the Bible. The authority in Catholic Christianity was in the bishops. The authority was not in the Bible. The Bible was a compendium of early traditions that had been preserved by Bishop Ignatius, Bishop Eusebius, by order of Constantine, approximately 350 CE, told to compile a Bible, and so he did. And what he compiled was something that represented fairly close to kind of somewhat of a consensus among Christians at that time. But till he compiled the Bible, there was no Bible at the Council of Nicaea in 325 CE. Nobody argued about what should be in the Bible because there was no Bible to have that argument about.
uh,
So, the Bible, the Bible is regarded as sacred and inspired in that sense, the Word of God, etc. But it was a tool for use by the bishops, who were told how to, been told what to do with it. Okay, so back to what was going on in Ephesus, approximately 90 CE. You had an Alexandrian, a Nazarene faction. The Alexandrians were inheritors of the of the Mark tradition, because after Mark wrote his gospel, which in its own peculiar way basically wrote Paul out of and portrayed Peter as a fool. Nazarenes in Alexandria, Alexandria being the world center of learning and philosophy, they heard that. I suppose they got a copy of what he'd written, and they told him to get his ass down to Alexandria because they just elected him bishop. And that's why, to this very day, northern Africa is referred to as the Sea of Mark. S E E. His oversight jurisdiction. It was Alexandrian Christianity tended to be mystical, because it was Alexandrian. So anyway, you had these two factions in Ephesus, Ephesus was probably the largest church in Asia Minor. It wasn't some little outpost. It was a major deal. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you had these two factions who thought that they could get along, and I'm guessing they thought that because it was kind of sort of working out in Antioch under the leadership of Bishop Ignatius. But it was like mixing oil and water. The Nazarenes were bitching that the Pauline Christians didn't have any interest in Jesus in the flesh, an actual human being. Resurrected not vertically in a magical body, but horizontally, he survived the crucifixion. And of course, the Pauline Christians weren't having any of that, because Paul's teaching on the matter was very clear. Not only did Paul have basically no interest in Jesus as a human being, and he insisted that the resurrection was a matter of Jesus magically turning into Paul himself says in his own writings, a spiritual body. For Paul, there was no problem of how did he escape the tomb. He could go through the rock if he wanted to.
Yeah.
You know? And Paul's doctrine was that the resurrection of Jesus was the we need to back up to Apocalypse just a little bit, the idea that at the end of time there would be this general resurrection of the dead, and then everybody would go to judgment. That idea originated with Zoroaster 1,000 years prior. And Paul, along with many people of that time, thought, well, the world can't go on like this. The end of time has got to happen pretty soon. Christ was humankind's last chance. And so Jesus himself was the first one to be raised from the dead in the general resurrection. He was raised from the dead, and then went up to be with God, get the place in the sky already, mm-hmm. and then he'd come back and fetch all the believers. Early on, Paul thought this was going to happen so soon that nobody would die first. He thought the people he was talking to were alive, they'd still be alive when all this happened. But people have the tendency to die now and then. So anyway, he figured out that. Believers in the mystery of Christ, if they died, there'd be the general resurrection, and they would be hoisted in the sky the same way that Jesus did, because Jesus was the first one, and Jesus doing this was proof of the soon to happen general resurrection of the dead. It was all part of the same thing. This is Paul's teaching in the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's in there as plain as day. It's very explicit. So if you ask what Pauline Christianity and the Nazareans had in common, basically nothing, other than they agreed that there had been this human being called Jesus.
Yeah.
And that he had resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't agree on what Jesus actually was. And they disagreed vehemently on what the resurrection was. So, yeah. When you realize how different the two religions are, you take a look at Bishop Ignatius and say, Bishop Ignatius was a genius of leadership.
Yeah.
He invented new the Nazarenes didn't invent a new religion. It was a sect of Judaism. James, the brother of Jesus, who was Bishop of Jerusalem, and himself a devout Jew, decided that there was a philosophical component of the teaching of Jesus that was really the basis of it, and that a person could follow that path without having to literally become a Jew. Okay, yeah, that guy, that idea got a lot of traction in the synagogues because in the Greco-Roman world, people were real interested in philosophy and religion. I mean, especially in the Greek world. Greeks loved religion and philosophy. Even the Bible is very explicit about that. It's just Greeks love this. Mm-hmm. They're really into this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so in the synagogues, you often had a lot of people who themselves weren't Jews, but they were attending. And liking an awful lot about what they heard. Okay, but when it comes to making that step of actually becoming a Jew, well, if you're a guy, there's this little problem. I got to do what? Paul explains this problem in detail.
Yeah,
it's in the Bible. In fact, in more detail than you might think. Paul tried to straddle the world between being a Jew and being a Greek. He was proud of being a Jew, but at the same time, his new religion, there was nothing there where you had to be Jewish. It didn't have anything to do with being Jewish. But he was trying to put he was always trying to convince the Nazareans that he was one of them. And so one time he made a trip to Jerusalem. Greeks who were not Jews who were attending the synagogue, the name for them was God-fearers. Okay, now, when we say fear, in this, it doesn't mean you're terrified of the monster. It means you're in awe of, So, it wasn't a derogatory term. Okay, in Greek, the word was Timotheus. That's where we get the name Timothy. On one of these trips to Jerusalem, Paul wanted to establish his bona fides. You heard me right.
He wanted to prove his stuff?
He wanted to establish his bona fides as being a real Jew. And so anyway, there was this God-fearer who I think was from Ephesus. I may be wrong about that, but I think it was from Ephesus. By the name of Timothy. Of course, there are scholars that say, "Oh, this sounds like, this sounds like fiction." Gee, what a coincidence! A God-fearer with the name of Timothy. Back then, there was no such thing as your legal name. You could change your name. You call yourself anything you wanted. Other people might call you whatever they wanted to call you. There's numerous examples of that in the Bible, including St. Paul himself. It was Saul of Tarsus. That was a Jewish name. But when he came up with this new Greek religion, he changed his name to Paul. Paulos, which is a Greek name. Just an example. He and Timothy were really good friends, and he wanted Timothy to accompany him. So I said, in order to go with me in the temple, they're gonna do a drop your door. They're gonna do a drop your drawers check. Okay, so you're gonna have to, cut it off. And so anyway, Timothy did. The Bible doesn't go into the details of whether it's green bloody murder or not. But anyway, so they went to Jerusalem and bragged about, "See, we're real Jews." You had these two factions that were really two different religions that Paul was trying to pretend it was the same religion. It was not. In fact, it was a mystery religion, a Greek mystery religion. Paul was very emphatic about this. He refers to his gospel as, his own words, "my gospel." In other words, not the gospel of the Nazareans. It was Paul's gospel. Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is read Paul's writings and what he says, and not in the Nazarene writings. Mm-hmm. It was Paul's gospel. There's no pretending different. His writings survived, and he tells us how he got his gospel and why it was his gospel and not somebody else's. And it was a Greek myth religion, and that's not just my opinion. Paul himself refers to his, he says, my gospel, Evangelion. He also uses the phrase, my mystery, Mysterion. He uses the two words interchangeably. It was a mystery religion. The mystery of the risen Christ. I don't know that he actually named it anything other than his mystery. Okay, but if you were going to name his mystery, that would kind of have to be it, the mystery of the risen Christ, because that's what the whole thing revolves around.
Yeah.
Okay, so... About 50 CE, James, the brother of Jesus, issued a circular letter. He was the bishop of Jerusalem, Paul was always sucking up to James. A real ass-kisser, and bullshitting James about what Paul was really doing. In response to a suggestion by Paul, actually, that the followers of the way not be required to actually become Jews, James said, damn, that's a good idea. And so kind of appropriated as his own. And wrote this circular letter saying, followers of the way don't have to become Jewish. They don't have to follow the Jewish law. And of course, the God-fearers in the synagogue who had previously been told that they couldn't be full-fledged members, said, oh, screw this, we're going to go attend the Nazarene synagogue. or the Pauline church. Back to Ephesus. We don't know when the Nazareans arrived in Ephesus, but somewhere along the line they did. There is a tradition that that they went there either immediately before or immediately after the siege of Jerusalem, which was from 66 to 70 CE. But anyway, there they were. It was like oil and water. They tried to find common ground in the war. They tried to find common ground. They couldn't find any. And so they parted ways. Both factions, their leaders were named John, which John was a real common name among Jews. Both of them were named John, and this caused an awful lot of problems later.
Can we take a break soon?
Yeah.